You're all set.
All right. Good afternoon. This is a meeting of the Title Setting Board pursuant to Article 40 of Title I CRS. The time is 1 o'clock. The date is November 1st, 2017. We're meeting in the Secretary of State's Aspen Room, 1700 Broadway, Denver, Colorado. Title Setting Board today consists of myself, Suzanne Steyer, Deputy Secretary of State, on behalf of Wayne Williams. Currently with us is Sharon Eubanks, Director of Office of Legislative Legal Services, and Glenn Roper, Deputy Solicitor General on behalf of Attorney General Cynthia Kaufman, and Matt Grove is our legal staff from the Attorney General's office. Today, we are meeting to consider three title settings and another matter that we've put back on the agenda from 2 weeks ago. For the titles that we're setting, there will be two titles for each measure. One is a statement and the other is a statement in the form of question. Changes adopted by the title board to the first title in the staff draft will be considered adopted for the other title. For anyone who wishes to testify, there is a sign-up sheet on the back table, and this hearing is being broadcast over the internet from the Secretary of State's website. Public restrooms are located on this floor. When the title board considers a proposed initiative for the first time, the board will follow three steps. First, board members may wish to ask questions of the proponents. This is to ensure that the board understands the proposal. Second, the board will determine if it has jurisdiction to set a title. In particular, the board must determine if the measure complies with the single subject rule prescribed in Article 5, Section 1, 5.5 of the Colorado Constitution, Section 1-40-106.5, Colorado Revised Statute. This is because the board is prohibited from setting a title for a measure that contains more than one subject. If the board determines it has jurisdiction to set a title, the board will use a staff-prepared draft for discussion purposes. Generally, we take all testimony first, and the board will discuss and vote after all testimony is completed. The decision is reached by two of three members of the board. Please take note, we are not concerned with the merits of any proposal here. We are only concerned with the setting of titles. And furthermore, we are not concerned with legal or constitutional objections to the measures, except to the extent such objections relate to the jurisdiction of the board to set titles or to the correctness of the title and the summary itself. Anyone who is dissatisfied with the decision of the title board may file a motion for rehearing with the Secretary of State within 7 calendar days. In the interest of brevity, speakers may incorporate remarks made on the record in prior hearings on similar measures. The first item on our agenda today, and I don't have the correct agenda in front of me anymore, is 2017-2018 number 48, which is state legislative redistricting. If the proponents could come forward on that one.
Hi.
Afternoon.
Good afternoon. Ben Larson of Ireland Stapleton here on behalf of the proponents of 48, Tony Larson, Kathleen Curry, who are here today behind me.
Okay, and so for the record, they're both present, and council, I'm not sure how much maybe you know or don't know about it, but I ask that this be reset because we failed to comply with a section of the statute that requires us to determine whether this is a repeal for purposes of deciding whether it would take 50% or 55%. And I don't think I think we only need to discuss the constitutional initiative, not the statutory one, but I believe they're both on the agenda. So with that said, I guess, you know, there are some issues here because, of course, the case is now on appeal, and so there are some issues about whether we still have jurisdiction. So I guess I want to know your thoughts on how we fix this.
So I think that the title board retains jurisdiction under the exception to the general rule. I mean, the face of this initiative, we all know, does more than simply repeal. And so I feel like that's really a non-issue, and this is simply a formality. And so I think it falls under the exception to the general rule, and that the title board can simply make this finding today, can supplement the record on appeal, and we go from there.
Okay. All right. Mr. Gruskin, is he here?
Still? Yes, sir.
Oh. Do you have anything you want to add to that? I mean, I tend to agree that it's not really much of a question that it would take 55%, but there's still the issue of what we do about the fact that we were supposed to do it and didn't.
So. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Mark Gruskin. In previous proceedings before the board, I've represented the title objectors as to number 48 and number 50, and had a conversation yesterday with the Attorney General, Leanne Morrill, about this. Extremely similar issues have been addressed by the Supreme Court about the title board's work product. And in the case of NRA titles for initiative number 1999-2000, number 255, Supreme Court's decision can be found at 4 Pacific 3rd, 485. The court specifically had to address whether or not a clerical error on the part of the board would be an exception to the general and applicable to the board's proceedings requirement that at the point at which an appeal has been lodged with an appellate court, this board lacks jurisdiction to act. And what the court held, as you undoubtedly know, is that the ability of the board to correct a clerical error is not the type of issue that would otherwise affect the jurisdiction of the appellate court. This actually is. This is an issue, had there been no notice of appeal, the board could have revisited it and made a finding. But this is an issue upon which appeal can be taken to the Supreme Court. And it wasn't raised. And to say, as the proponent suggests here, everybody knew what's the big deal, doesn't reflect the case law that the board's jurisdiction and capacity to change its substantive or add to its substantive decision ends at the point at which a notice of appeal is filed. Had no notice of appeal been filed, perhaps you could readdress it. You probably could. But it's out of your hands. It's out of your hands. Okay. And how that gets resolved and at what point now, if it is jurisdictional to the court, and it may well be, even considering an initiative where the title board hasn't made that decision, then clearly the court will tell you, you need to make that decision and then you can pass upon the title. If it isn't jurisdictional to the court, but it is conclusive as to your opportunity to make this particular decision, then it is beyond your hands. I would also note, as the board undoubtedly knows because of the balance of the agenda, that whether or not number 48 has the kind of longevity that the board may have anticipated or wondered about when it first set the title may be less of an issue now that it's the proponents have proposed 67, 68, 69. But regardless, that doesn't let you off the hook or allow you to make a substantive decision that by statute you were required to make but did not make at the suggestion of anybody who appeared before you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for?
No questions.
Other? Okay. Any discussion by the board on what we may or may not want to do with that?
I'm happy to start us off.
Sure, go ahead.
I think I have to agree with Mr. Gruskin that I don't equate the board's ability or determination as to whether or not number 48 is total repeal or not for purposes of determining the percentage of votes required to approve it if it were to be on the ballot. That this is not a clerical error. I mean, I think the board has an affirmative duty under the statute to make this determination. And it's also my understanding from not only reading the statute, but having been involved in the drafting of the statute, that what was, at least my recollection, was intended that once the determination was made, it could be grounds for a motion for rehearing, as well as then also appealed up to the Supreme Court. So That's why I don't think this is, it can be treated as a clerical error. So in terms of the jurisdictional issue, I think with 48 currently pending before the Supreme Court, I'm not sure that we do have jurisdiction to make a determination at this point in time, absent something happening, you know, whether it's remanded back to the title board or it's just an issue that's raised with the Supreme Court, you know, how that might be dealt with. But I'm not sure that we have jurisdiction at this point in time.
So did that section regarding that this would be subject to a rehearing and then appealable, is that in here?
I think that's because it's in terms of the provision that it appears in, and then in terms of the motion, the section on motion for rehearing, it's everything that's made in terms of a determination pursuant to this section. And so because it was supposed to be made at the first meeting, that then it becomes a decision that is subject to the motion for rehearing and then appeal. That's at least my recollection and understanding.
Right,
and
but that
I'm just
was
speaking for myself.
Yeah, I guess my question is that was an open issue when we went up on the issue of whether the fiscal impact would be appealable. Right, Matt? Didn't we take that up last year?
Well, I think the, and I didn't bring my copy of the statute, but my recollection, the provision on motion for rehearing specifically includes the fiscal impact as grounds for motion for rehearing, and we may have added something about the determination also. I'm happy to look at that.
Because we didn't appeal on that last year about, maybe you can help me, Mr. Gruskin, but we had an appeal about whether that was an appealable issue to the Supreme Court or whether only the issues related to title and single subject were appealable. So I guess my question is it really clear that this is something the Supreme Court would even necessarily hear?
As to your last question, I can't say
right.
That it is, except that I believe it's 1-40-106 authorizes the board or requires the board to make the decision, and 140-107 allows the issue to be a subject for a motion for rehearing, and it is the accepted practice of the court that in order to be heard at the court, you have to raise an issue in the motion for rehearing or at the rehearing, one or the other. So it necessarily is an operation, I believe by operation law, would be subject to an appeal to the Supreme Court. And as to the fiscal impact and abstract issue, that's not an issue, as you know, you get to consider when you necessarily hear the title in the first instance or decide the title in the first instance. But it is a subject for reconsideration in a motion for rehearing. And it was considered by the Supreme Court as a function of an appeal that my client and I lost at the Supreme Court in terms of the format of the abstract. So clearly those are issues that the court can consider and will consider if raised as a function of these proceedings.
And if I can clarify, in addition to 3.5 being added to 140-106, there was a provision added to 140-107. It's in 1A Room 3 that specifically provides that if anyone's not satisfied with the determination of the title board pursuant to 106-3.5 with respect to whether a petition that proposes a constitutional amendment only repeals in whole or in part, then that's grounds for motion for rehearing.
And if I could just add, the reason behind that isn't, I don't believe, arbitrary, although wasn't involved in drafting the statute. What you're doing is providing directions for the proponents as to what they're going to be required to do in the election process and what hurdles they need to meet. And to that end, it becomes potentially a post-election issue if you haven't addressed it in this process. And so there's a good amount of common sense that applies to resolving it here and allowing the Supreme Court to review it before proponents engage in their campaign.
Okay.
So just a couple of points to add. I think when you look at the underlying case, that case cited by Mr. Gruskin, the case that is cited therein, it's broader than simply clerical errors. I think the thing to focus on is the board wouldn't be doing anything to change its prior order on the issues that are being appealed, on the question of the titles. That's the narrow issue that's being appealed. If the court, if the board wanted to make its determination today, a motion for rehearing could be filed, an appeal could be filed on the narrow issue, which is a separate issue of whether or not this is subject to the 55% requirement, even though we all know that's never going to happen. But someone could, and someone could appeal the decision on the motion for a hearing, and there could be another appeal filed to the Supreme Court. The court could put those together, whether it chooses to or not, whether there's a motion. But I don't think it would prevent anyone from moving for rehearing or filing an appeal on the separate issue, which I think could be considered a separate order. You could issue a separate order on the question of whether or not this thing is subject to the 55% requirement. So I don't think the board would be doing anything to change its prior order on the issues of single subject and the titles. And that case is Lopez Samoya, 887 P2D 8.
Glenn, you have anything?
I have a question for Mr. Gruskin, which is what, from your position, how should we proceed? What would your view or suggestion be for how this process would play out if we were to follow your view and not address and decide that we do not have jurisdiction over this question?
I start from the starting point is you can't reclaim a matter that's committed to the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court. So you cannot make a decision based on the 55%. I assume that the proponents, if they decide to go forward with 48, would ask you nonetheless to make a decision and then follow Mr. Larson's path after the Supreme Court decides on the adequacy of this title. But that desire to have clarity before you begin your campaign, that's an obligation that is placed squarely on the shoulders of the proponents. If they really want to have that decision made, they need to petition the board to make it as part of the process that's provided by statute. So the bottom line is it's your reach goes to here. But this issue, now that the appeal has been filed, is beyond your grasp. You don't have the legal capacity to draw it back in, to draw this matter, to draw anything that relates to the statutory process back in.
So your view would be we would never make a determination on the 3.5 unless it got remanded to us from the Supreme Court?
Certainly if it was remanded, you could make it at that point. It would seem to me that if the proponents, Mr. Larson suggested that there's no lack of clarity and that they are confident that they know that they would have to get 55% on number 48. I suppose that there is no condition set in the statute that you can't collect signatures until you have a resolution there. It was meant for the benefit of the proponents. And I would think that they would be able to petition you in order to fulfill that requirement once the Supreme Court issues its decision, whether it's a remand or whether it's an affirmance of the title board's decision.
I guess my inclination would probably be a little bit different from Sharon, and that is to you know, this is not, I think it's pretty clear this is not a clerical error of the type that was at issue in the case that's been cited, but then it's also not, doesn't deal with the order and decision that we made previously and that the appeal was taken from. So I'm probably a little more conflicted than Sharon about whether we would have jurisdiction to make the determination of outlined in 140.106 3.5. So just based on where I am right now, I'd probably my inclination would be to move forward and make a determination on that, you know, then the appellants or proponents can provide whatever record they would, or, you know, whatever supplementation they would like to the Supreme Court addressing that issue.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. It's not something that we touched upon in the last two meetings. I wish we had, but so, I mean, I'm inclined to go ahead and make a decision, and if the court finds that we don't have jurisdiction, then they'll remand it, and we'll be back here.
And we'd know for next time.
Yeah. We won't forget next time. So I don't think that'll be a problem. But, I mean, I guess given that there's two of us that want to at least discuss it, let's have the proponents come up. And, I mean, I think you've already said, but just so we can confirm, you believe that under the standard in 140.106 3.5, that this would be 55%.
Correct.
Okay.
And I would just add one thing, if that's the direction. There was a discussion that proponents would supplement the record, but I think it may be more appropriate if the Secretary of State's office supplements the record to the court.
Okay. We'll let our legal counsel figure that one out. is there anyone else who wishes to speak on the substance of the issue, which is whether this is a proposed constitutional amendment with only a repeal for purposes of 1-4B of Article 5? No? All right. Then, Glenn, you want to make a motion?
Sure. I move that we conclude that the initiative in 2017-18, number 48, does not only repeal in whole or in part a provision of the state constitution.
Second.
Before we vote, I'd just like to make one more comment. In terms of this, the concept that's being advanced by the proponents in terms of what's making this sort of a bifurcated process, you know, this is a whole sort of second step. It bothers me in terms of, you know, the title board, the process for setting titles for motions for rehearing is a very tight time frame. We have the meeting within a certain time period. We're supposed to make certain determinations. Motions for rehearing have to be filed within a certain time frame. We have to have a hearing on motions for rehearing. And now to be potentially doing this again on this particular issue, spanning, I don't know, instead of the normal sort of 3 or 4 weeks, now it's 8 weeks, I mean, in terms of this whole process on number 48, that bothers me. I just, I'm not comfortable with that. I think that we have to stick with the time frames. The decision, unfortunate as it is, wasn't made at the time that we should have made it. And I'm going to vote no because I just don't agree that we have jurisdiction at this point in time.
And I think if we were at the end of the season and we were statutorily prohibited from conducting meetings because we were past the May date, you know, maybe I'd be in a different position. But given where we are right now, I'm comfortable with it. So all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay. That passes 2-1. And that takes us technically to number 50. but I think we don't. Well, I'll have the proponents come up, and then I'll just confirm that we don't need to hear that one. So.
Again, Ben Larson on behalf of the proponents of 50, Tony Larson, Kathleen Curry, who are both here today, and I don't think there's anything that needs to be addressed today on number 50.
Right, and for the record, number 50 is a statutory change, and so this section of the statute 3.5 that we've been discussing wouldn't apply. So I think we'll just call that one done.
Thank you.
All right, thanks. All right, okay, and we are switching our representative from Legislative Legal, and Jason Gallander will be joining us. And luckily, all our matters for the rest of the day are statutory changes, so we don't have to revisit 3.5. So the first is 2017-2018, number 60, repeal of provisions concerning large capacity ammunition magazines. If the proponents could come forward. Good afternoon. Can you just introduce yourselves?
My name is Kevin Klingsheim. I'm a Colorado resident, and this is my girlfriend, Jaslyn Ford. We are both proponents of this proposal.
Okay. And if you can start out, just tell us what you think the single subject of your proposal is.
This is going to be about the repeal of what it says, the repeal of the magazine capacity laws concerning guns here in our state of Colorado.
Okay. Anyone have any questions for the proponents? Anybody wishes to speak on the single subject? No? Okay, thanks. Any discussion?
Well, I think we've seen a measure substantively identical to this in the past, 2013-14. We found a single subject for that, set a title for it. I see no reason to do differently this time. So I would move that we find that proposed initiative 2017-18, number 60, a repeal of provisions concerning large capacity ammunition magazines, has a single subject, and that the board has jurisdiction to set a title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. That takes us to the staff draft. Have you had a chance to look over the staff draft? It's the language.
Oh, yeah.
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 Okay. And do you have any comments on the draft?
Change. It's all what I already seen before. It's everything there is valid.
Okay. You don't have any issues with the wording?
Nope.
Or suggestions for change?
No, ma'am.
Okay. All right. Any questions by the board?
No.
Anyone else here who wishes to speak on the language, ballot language? No? All right. Okay. You guys can go ahead and have a seat. We won't make you stand the whole time. If we have any other questions for you, we might call you back up. All right. Then discussion by the board?
I think the only thing I'd say is we did set a title on something substantively identical to this in 2013-14. I actually don't care for what we did back then. I think it was, you know, we didn't use the concerning language, and I don't think it was very clear really what the single subject was when we did that. So I'd prefer to at least start with the staff draft, and if we have any changes, go from there.
Okay. I don't have a problem with the staff draft, except I think we need to describe it a little. I mean, we've kind of gone away from using General Assembly because nobody really knows what that is. And I'm not sure I want to refer to something passed in 2013 because I think we are far enough away from it that I'm not sure people will know what that's about. But other than that, I'm...
No, I had that same thought, and I would... The phrase that Stephen is highlighting right now, I would probably be inclined to remove as well. I'm not sure. You know, that's not something that we typically do, say, when statutes were enacted, when there's a proposed repeal. And so I would support removing that language.
What do you got, Jason?
I do have a thought, which is I think in recent years we've tended to you know, do a single subject pretty broadly and use the trailer more to describe what's going on. I would suggest, and I don't think when we say here, it doesn't really talk much about sort of the regulation. I would suggest something like a change to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning the regulation of large capacity ammunition magazines, or we could put the repeal area if you think it's necessary, and then saying in connection therewith, repealing statutes that, subject to specified exceptions, prohibit the sale, possession, or transfer of such magazines and require labeling of them, essentially.
Yeah, I think that's fine. I don't think we need the repeal language, but.
Concerning the regulation.
Yeah, because I think that's what the subject really is. In 2013, we established statutes that regulated these, and now we're getting rid of all that regulation. And the other thing with the staff draft is we talk about repealing prohibitions, but the prohibitions have exceptions, and I think we should at least kind of make that clear.
Jason, would you mind reading one more time what you had put together there?
Yeah, I'll have Stephen try that.
I'll have him put it up if that's
thank you. Yeah, easier. That'd be very helpful.
Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, I think that looks good. I don't think I would have any comments on that.
Yeah, it looks good to me.
Okay.
Let me ask the proponents first. Do y'all have any comments on what we did there? Okay. And anyone else who wanted to speak, come on up and identify yourself. And
it's trivial.
Well, that's fine, but if you want to speak on it, you got to.
Mike Spaulding, member of the audience. I think the word labeling has one L.
Oh, see, that we could fix. I'm going to go ahead and read it in then. It's a change to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning the regulation of large capacity ammunition magazines and in connection therewith repealing statutes that, subject to specified exceptions, prohibit the sale, possession, or transfer of such magazines and require the labeling of any such magazine manufactured or assembled in Colorado after July 1, 2013.
All right. Yes, I would move that we set the title as was just read into the record.
Second.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. That takes us to 2017-2018, number 61, criminal justice procedures. If the proponents could come forward and identify yourselves.
Mike Spaulding, co-proponent.
Marty Nielsen, co-proponent.
And could you start out just telling us what you believe the single subject of your measure is?
All right, before we begin this session, I don't know if this is relevant or not, but we just received a fiscal note for both of these. And is that going to be part of this at all, or we can ignore that for now? It's odd that it just came in a few minutes ago.
Well, the fiscal note is generally heard on the rehearing, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we, under the statute right now, we don't take it up at the initial hearing, so it's there. And if you have objections to it and to the abstract specifically, you can raise those at a rehearing if need be.
Okay. All right.
The timing wasn't a gotcha.
No, well, it's like, how can we respond to this? Yeah. But, all right, as far as the number 61, what we're trying to do is reorient the focus of the Colorado criminal justice system. There's been an accumulation of practices and abuses that have led to increasing injustice, and so this is a reset. And it covers from immediately after arrest through the trial and incarceration and even after release. So the signal subject is that we're reorienting the focus of the Colorado criminal justice system.
Okay. Anyone have any questions for the proponent? No?
No, not questions, I don't think.
Okay. Anyone else here who wishes to speak on the single subject? Okay. Comments from the board?
So I do have some significant concerns about the whether this satisfied the single subject. You know, my reading is that this actually covers a variety of different subjects, some of which were identified in the memo from Legislative Council staff dated October 12, 2017. And I think, you know, that one of the purposes of the single subject requirement is to avoid bringing together groups that may be interested in one part but not the other, and so they'll vote in favor. And I think that is a concern here. And I, you know, just a list of subjects that I picked out as I was going through, I think there could be a number of them. But, for example, abolishing grand juries, prohibiting anyone other than local prosecutors from filing criminal charges, eliminating the use of plea bargains and sentencing bargains, allowing non-indigent defendants to use public defenders, revising criminal sentences and consequences of conviction for certain nonviolent crimes, eliminating word, page, and content limits for criminal pleadings and appeals, directing the General Assembly and local governments to make a list of all crimes and then vote on whether to repeal or reduce them, and then allowing prosecutors and others to be sued for gross intentional conduct relating to criminal trials. I think each of those, or at least a number of them, could be considered separate subjects, all addressed in this single legislation. And so I have significant concerns about whether that requirement is satisfied.
And I went through it and and the title board doesn't really, I mean, we're not in the position to tell you how to fix it. And any comments that we make are solely in the discretion of each board member. But I counted at least 9 separate subjects. And the reason for that is because the case law on single subject essentially says that if there are 2 distinct and separate purposes that are not dependent on each other. So the question is whether it's dependent on each other. So, for instance, if you put a tax into place and then you do some implementation, or you talk about, you know, 18-year-olds being able to drink alcohol and then you do some implementation of that. But when you put 2 things together that don't have to be connected together, that's when you run into trouble on single subject. So whether or not you can Looking at some of these, but, you know, whether or not you can use illegally obtained evidence really has nothing to do with restitution. Bail really has nothing to do with grand juries necessarily. I mean, they are connected, but they're not necessarily connected. You could do each one separately. And when you put, you know, sort of your whole wish list into a statute, I can understand why people do it. I mean, nobody wants to run 11 separate initiatives, but, you know, that's just not what the case law allows for. You can't just put everything on the wish list into the initiative. It has to be necessarily connected to each particular subject. Because you may have people out there who say, you know, I absolutely agree we should be able to sue afterwards and if I was wrongly convicted. But that same person may entirely disagree about bail conditions. And, you know, to fold those together makes a person, they may, you know, you may fold it in and they may vote one way or the other when they could be voting on separate issues. So anyway, go ahead, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with both of the other members of the board. There's just, you know, a lot here. I mean, I think even in your opening statement, when you say things, I think you even probably realize how you say things like there's been an accumulation of practices, you know, and you're trying to fix them all or we're trying to do a whole reset. I mean, the criminal justice system is a big thing. There's two lines of cases specifically that I think cover this. One is there's several cases that basically say if a measure combines procedural and substantive changes that aren't necessarily and properly connected. An example I might use from this measure would be eliminating grand juries, which I think is largely a procedural matter, and then requiring the payment of restitution, which is a substantive matter that tends to be multiple subjects. We've had that in the tax context in a couple of cases that said measures that create a tax cut and also impose new criteria for voter approval of tax spending and debt increases have multiple subjects. And I can give you these sites afterwards if you'd like them. Had another case where a measure to liberalize initiative and referendum procedures, which was probably procedural, also included a prohibition on attorneys setting ballot titles, had multiple subjects. So that's one line. And I think the second line of cases, which I know you're familiar with, is the ones about using umbrella single subjects, that there can be something that even if it encompasses everything in a measure, it's simply too broad. Now, the classic case in this is In Re Public Rights and Waters number 2, which said water could not be used as an overarching theme to create a single subject, where the court couldn't find unifying or common objectives between district election paragraphs and the public trust doctrine. And then the one which you're very familiar with, as is the board, since the court reversed us on the recall petitions, where, you know, trying to use a single subject of recall of government officers was an umbrella term and too broad to cover both the extension of recall to non-elected officers in addition to a main subject of modifying recall petition procedures. So based on all that case law, I just think you've got too much in here.
And I agree, there is a lot in here. And the problem is when an innocent person gets caught up in our justice system, they get hit with a lot of different things, with plea bargain games, with, well, they're listed here. And so the key to this is to look at what is the impact of the criminal justice system on a person, innocent or not, and how it works. And if you don't modify all of these, then you'll still have the abuses and the innocent person is still subject to some real problems. For instance, bail. I mean, if you get somebody who's innocent but not of means and they're taken up and they're set, the bail's set for $50,000, they have to come up with $5,000 cash. Maybe they can't do that. So now they stay in jail until their trial. They lose their job, they lose their family, you know, whatever, their house. So all of these abuses together take any individual who encounters the criminal justice system and subjects them to, you know, quite a problem. And if you try and correct these one at a time, which, you know, you could do that through legislation or otherwise, the person is still suffering the negative effects until everything's fixed.
And I understand you have a general purpose, but I mean, we can't consider the merit of you know, your proposal. And I understand everyone who comes in here is passionate about their issue, but I mean, you could say the same thing about school education reform, you know. I mean, you could come in and decide, I want to reform education. Well, that would probably necessarily take, you know, a tax fix, and maybe you would want to say something about buildings that exist, and you would want to say something about student-teacher ratio, and you would have just this umbrella of things that, you know, in your mind you wanted to fix. But each one of those would probably have to be fixed separately because they're separate issues. And so, you know, your desire to have overarching reform can still be met, but it has to be done a single subject at a time.
Well, and isn't the legislature also subject to single subject for their legislation?
They are.
And 267, which was recently passed, I mean, it covered all kinds of things, a whole bunch of different stuff. And as long as it's related to the main topic or to accomplishing the main goal, you're there. I mean, we're not talking about taxes here. We're not talking about highway construction, although, you know, you need a highway to transport the prisoner or whatever. But we're just concerned with the individual's contact with the criminal justice system.
So two quick comments I would say to that is, I think when addressing single subject, we're less bound by what the legislature does than by what the courts have told us about how the single subject needs to be defined and applied. And there's a line from the Colorado Supreme Court that says, while the initiative's subject or purpose may be broad, an initiative cannot satisfy the single subject requirement simply by claiming that each proposed change falls under the same general overarching theme. And that's what I'm concerned about here, is that you have a theme of effects on someone who is charged with a crime or something of that nature. Right. But when you put it all together, I think there's just too many, there's just more than one subject addressed by the proposed initiative.
Well, we disagree.
Yes, I'd also just briefly point out that, you know, regardless of 267, you know, it's a completely separate process. Obviously, this board has no control in any way over what the General Assembly does. And, you know, that was subject to a legislative vetting process, and single subject arguments against that bill were made. In the end, at that first step of the process, the legislature, they decided that, or enough of them to pass it, decided that single subject wasn't an issue, that they passed it. And that, you know, could be subject to judicial challenge and resolved by the courts down the road. It may not. But it's just, sort of not on point for anything we do here. What's on point here is what the courts tell us. And, you know, based on all the cases we've seen, the courts are going to tell us if we don't. It seems very, very unlikely that the courts would tell us anything other than that this has multiple subjects. And we're bound to follow our, you know, best reading as to what they're going to do.
All right. You want to make a motion then?
Yes. I would move that proposed initiative 2017-18 number 61, criminal justice procedures, has multiple subjects, and that therefore the title board lacks jurisdiction to set a title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, so you have 7 days to come back for rehearing.
I'll have to look at it.
So the next matter on the agenda is proposed initiative 2017-2018, number 62. And again, if you can just introduce yourself for the record.
This is Mike Spaulding, co-proponent.
Marty Nielsen, co-proponent.
And can you start by telling us what you believe the single subject of this initiative is?
Income tax.
Okay. Any questions from the board? Anyone else who wishes to speak on single subject? All right. Comments from board members? You want to start?
Yeah, I do have, I'd like to discuss, I do have some single subject concern with this one as well. And I think, you know, I'd be interested in the rest of the board on your view on this one, but it seems to be doing a couple of different things that I'm not sure are necessarily connected in the way required for single subject. It is, for example, replacing any criminal income tax violations with just civil cases and fines. It's then simplifying, if I could use that term, the filing of returns and limiting it to a four-line process. And then separately, it is requiring the dismissal and voiding of all state income tax criminal cases. And then potentially a fourth subject is adjusting the state income tax rate. And I think at least some of those are potentially multiple subjects, although I'm interested in hearing from the other board members.
Yeah, I mean, I have similar concerns with this initiative. Prohibiting the state from taking action before a final court judgment, dismissing all the criminal cases. I mean, I think you're probably okay with how you file a return, and maybe you're okay with how many lines are on the return. That seems to be implementation, but some of these aren't implementation. Some of these are separate subjects that have to do with enforcement, and certainly the one that's retroactive to the dismissal of all the current cases. So I think I have similar concerns, and you all sent in something, you know, in advance of these, talking about how long these questions were and how the board has set, you know, questions that are much more simple in the past, and you believe that these questions were too verbose. And I guess my response to that is that's because there's so many subjects in them. And it's, you know, that this just wouldn't be something that we could set in a few lines. And that may be sort of a clue to you, you know, that that's part of the problem here. But I think there are multiple subjects in this initiative as well.
I actually did, after looking at it a little bit more, have a question on the part about all state income tax criminal cases, both prior and pending, shall be dismissed and void. Could you just tell me a practical? So say I'm sitting in jail because I've done some substantial violation of an income tax law. Am I then sort of to be immediately released and have my record expunged? Is that what's the effect of that?
I think what we're trying to do is switch the system from criminal to civil, similar to traffic courts and the like. And so these are cases in progress now. I believe your guy in jail who embezzled a bunch of money and didn't report the taxes on it or whatnot, he can stay there. But we're moving the whole single subject here is that we're changing the Colorado income tax. And we're moving it to a simpler system, a civil system. It might help if I actually read our proposed ballot title, because that might help to look at the single subject if you're open. It's only a few words.
If I could just follow up really quickly on Jason's comment. It says all state income tax criminal cases, both prior and pending, shall be dismissed and void. And that would seem to encompass an individual who's been convicted and is serving a sentence. Wouldn't they be a prior state income tax criminal case? I'm just not sure what you just told us is consistent with the language. And I don't want to try to do too much of parsing the meaning of the language, but could you just respond briefly to that?
I don't see it that way. Prior might be a case that was tried or was in process. They're talking about when it's started or when it was in process. So, you know, some tax cases go on for years. So as long as it's still in process, even if it was a prior case from 3 years ago, it's still going out the door, you know, as part of the transition over to the civil system.
Thank you.
Would you be interested in hearing our proposed title? As that may help see this as a single subject?
Is it different than what you sent in? Didn't you send something in?
I think I sent that to Steve. It's about 58 words long.
Yeah. I think we have it. It was distributed to us.
Okay.
I will talk to the single subject question. I do agree with my fellow board members here. I mean, I do think this is considerably closer to having a single subject than the other measure was. But the Colorado Supreme Court has been, in its cases, fairly tight on this. As I mentioned earlier, there's been at least a few cases that say that a measure that creates a tax cut and also imposes new criteria for voter approval of tax spending or debt increases has multiple subjects. There are a few cases on that. You know, I'm looking at even just subsection 4. You know, it has a tax cut, phased-in tax cut, and then also requires ballot titles to have new requirements. You know, they have to start at a certain time. They have to have a fixed yearly dollar amount. We have that now for the first year, but not going forward. And then especially this substantive provision about them being required to expire in 4 years, which is new. I think in combination, just that with our case law amounts to a couple of subjects. And then, you know, some of the other things as well, the procedural changes, you know, especially the one about the pending cases being dismissed and void, the criminal cases, I think is significant. And I'm just not seeing it. I think there's too much here as well, although to a lesser degree than in the other one.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. But, you know, when you're filling out your taxes, when you're paying taxes, all these things impact you. And that's why they're in here, especially the difference between civil and criminal. That's a big part of simplifying the taxes. You know, there are a lot of people who take their 1040 EZ and they pay to have it prepared, and they pay to have the Colorado tax fund prepared when that should be something that they could handle themselves.
Well, that may be true, but there might be people who are all for reducing the state income tax rate, but also believe that if you don't pay it, you should go to jail. So, I mean, those are just very disconnected in my mind. I mean, what the rate of tax is really has nothing to do with whether you go to jail if you don't pay it. And so I just think that those two are very disconnected. And I just can't get past that. It's just not really a sort of, which is why I said, you know, maybe how you file it might, you know, be okay. But I don't think that getting into this other stuff that comes after that point is really going to get me there. I just think those are separate subjects. So, anyone want to make a motion?
Sure. I would move that proposed initiative 2017-18 number 62, state income tax, does not have a single subject, and therefore the board lacks jurisdiction to set a title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Right.
Okay. So then the board will not proceed with title setting, and again, you have 7 days to file a motion for rehearing.
Thank you.
And that is the final item on our agenda. The time is 2:00, and we are adjourned.